come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Gerard. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excused. Scott.
flag salute will be led by Representative Chuck Riley.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. The opening ceremony today will be presented by Susanna Mars. She will be singing, and she will be accompanied by Bill Wells. They are from Damascus and guests of Representative Lim.
We love Irving Berlin and thought you might too. Let's go slummin', take me slummin'. Let's go slummin' on Park Avenue. Let us hide behind a pair of fancy glasses and make faces as the members of the classes passes. Let's go smelling where they're dwelling, sniffing everything the way they do. Let us go to it, they do it, why can't we do it too? Let's go slumming, those are thumbing at Park Avenue. Let's go smelling where they're dwelling, sniffing everything the way they do. Let us go to it, they do it, why can't we do it too? Let's go slumming, those are thumbing at Park Avenue. Have you seen the well-to-do up and down Park Avenue on that famous thoroughfare with their noses in the air? High hats and aero collars, white spats and lots of dollars, spending every dime for a wonderful time. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits, putting on the Ritz. Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coats, perfect fits, putting on the Ritz. Strolling up the avenue so happy, all dressed up just like an English chappie, very snappy. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks and umbrellas in their mitts, putting on the Ritz. Strolling down the avenue so happy, all dressed up just like an English chappie, very snappy. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks and umbrellas in their mitts, putting on the Ritz. Putting on the Ritz. Putting on the Ritz. Putting on the Ritz.
Thank you very much, Susanna and Bill. We enjoyed that very much. Courtesies, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm hoping that some of the folks from Lynn Benton Community College are still here. They were here a few hours ago. Oh, yeah, okay, here we go. If you'd stand up. I'm looking all over the place for you here. But anyways, Bill O'Brien, he's left the building already, but I just kind of wanted to share a little bit about him. He's the general manager from National Frozen Foods in Albany. And in his 17 years there, he has been in the industry. They've seen the industry go from sprockets and chains to circuit boards and electronics, technological advancements that have brought the food industry to a whole new level, improving both productivity and profit. Point being is that the community colleges are needed, and the design that right now that Lynn Benton Community College has for people that they can diagnose and repair this type of technology. And anyways, would just appreciate your support and thank very much and recognizing the folks from Lynn Benton Community College. Thank you.
Remind members of the public that the House has a certain set of protocols, and if the members on the floor are applauding, you can feel free, but otherwise we generally do not applaud in the chamber. Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope that you will join me in extending courtesies of the House to a number of people who are here today from my legislative district. As a special order of business today, we'll be hearing House Bill 3328, which involves child abuse investigation, and it stems from a death that occurred in our community of a little girl named Carly Sheehan. And her parents are here today. Sarah Sheehan is in the side gallery along with Carly's grandparents. Carly's father is also here today to listen to the debate about this bill. And we also have Joan Demarest, who is the deputy district attorney who prosecuted this case. So welcome to the Capitol, and I hope you'll all join me in helping them to feel welcome.
Welcome. Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Some of you may have read the letter on your desks, but I want to extend courtesies to Mrs. Susanna Mars. Susanna is an accomplished singer and actress, as you already heard this morning. She had a show, Mars on Life, that premiered in New York. In 1998, her solo recording, Take Me to the World, was nominated by the Manhattan Association of Cabaret Artists and Clubs as one of the best CDs. Susanna has performed locally with artists, Repertory Theater, Portland Center Stage, and Oregon Cabaret Theater. My staff informed me she did an excellent job in the local production of Bad Boy. With Susanna are her daughters Katie and Olivia Johnson. Katie could not be here today, but the lovely girl is Olivia, which I met this morning already in my office. Susanna is accompanied by her in-law, Mr. and Mrs. John and Millie Johnson, and her pianist is also Mr. Bill Wells. Bill is a good man, and he lives in Representative Mary Nolan's district. And also, you will notice her photographer, Jim Lacey. Lastly, up in the gallery are Chris Darcy, Jim Cox, and Kat Bells of the Arts Commissions and Cultural Trust, where they are. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my honor to greet a couple of honorary pages. First, we have Stephanie Wax. Stephanie, could you stand up, please? Stephanie is an eighth grader at Lake Oswego Junior High School, and she's very musical. She plays the oboe, the saxophone, the piano, also sings, and she plans to go to college to study music. Her other interests include cross-country, track, and field. And we welcome her to the Capitol today. Thank you, Stephanie. And we also have Devin Pritchard. And Devin is in the eighth grade from Lake Oswego Junior High School. She is a competitive swimmer, loves to read, loves drama, cooking, and community service. She aims for a career in the performing arts or the culinary arts. Welcome to the Capitol, both of you.
Further courtesies. Saturday, April 28th, was Representative Bruce Hanna's birthday. Happy birthday, Representative Hanna. Messages from the Governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Governor to inform that he has approved and signed the following bill, House Bill 2447.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 694, 875, 1040, House Bills 2071, 2072, adopted SCR 14. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed Senate Bills 55, 24, 61, 103, 106, 197, 241, and 570.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HGM 24, urging Congress to institute comprehensive immigration reform, secure borders of the United States of America, and reimburse Oregon taxpayers for costs of incarcerating criminal aliens. HGR 57, calling upon President and Congress to take certain action relating to illegal immigration. SCR 14, commending South Lane School District Superintendent Krista Parent upon being named National Superintendent of the Year.
Measures read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3328 relating to child abuse investigations and declaring an emergency.
Question now arise upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3328A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3328 is the kind of bill that none of us want to bring before this body. We wish that it was the type of bill that we didn't need to have. No one likes to talk about child abuse. However, the truth is that an average of 19 Oregon children die every year as a result of child abuse here in Oregon. Far more live in terror every day, knowing that the very adults who are supposed to protect them instead strike them with their hands, fists, or worse. We must come together to improve our system to protect children. The abuse and neglect of tens of thousands of Oregon kids each year is one of the unspoken tragedies of our state. Sometimes we have individual tragedies that shed light on these problems, and that is what House Bill 3328, also known as Carly's Law, is designed to do. The bill is named for a little girl, a blonde, very adorable little girl named Carly Sheehan. She was 3 years old in June of 2005 when she was brutally murdered as a result of abuse. In 2004, which was the year that Carly's abuse began, DHS reviewed 46,524 reports of suspected child abuse and neglect. At least two of those reports in 2004 were about two-year-old Carly Sheehan. Of those 46,524 reports reviewed, 7,307 cases, or just over 15%, were founded allegations of abuse. Carly Sheehan was one of the 39,217 children, or nearly 85%, whose cases were determined to be unfounded for abuse. Carly was killed several months later in the summer of 2005. By this time, she was 3 years old. In 2005, DHS reviewed 55,114 reports of abuse and neglect. Only about 14% of these cases were founded. And although she died that summer after systemic torture and abuse at the hands of her killer, Carly was not the subject of any of those reports. In fact, we know from research that when an individual has knowledge of actual abuse or neglect, only 1 in 3 times will that abuse or neglect actually be reported. When Carly died in 2005, she was one of 18 Oregon children whose deaths were directly related to abuse or neglect inflicted by their parents or family caregivers. Including Carly, 16 of the children killed by their parents and caregivers that year were under the age of 5. At the end of the trial, the judge who presided over the case noted that Carly's case reflected a continuum of failure in response to child abuse in our community, and specifically to Carly, over the last very difficult 8 months of her life. She suggested that the community was due for some deep soul searching about whether a timely and more appropriate investigation might have saved Carly. The judge had said, if we are really willing to look at ourselves, this might be the one good thing that comes from this tragedy. And that is what Carly's Law is designed to do. I'd like to walk you through the provisions of the bill. And first, it's important to point out a couple of points about this case. First, Carly initially was reported to DHS after she reported to her child care provider that someone was hitting her about the head. She saw her family doctor, and there were investigations and interviews that happened, but ultimately DHS dismissed the case as unfounded. Shortly after that, Carly came home to her father again, only this time she was covered from head to toe in bruises. Much of her hair had been pulled out from her head. The father took photos of this beautiful little girl at that time. The police came, the police saw Carly, and the dad even took this child to the DHS office. Nothing happened. The report remained unfounded for abuse. During the trial, these photographs were produced, and people had the opportunity to see them. And one of the questions that arose was, how could this case possibly be founded? What is it that went wrong? And looking back, there were many people who felt that if Carly had had the opportunity to be examined by a physician that knew how to diagnose child abuse inflicted injuries, perhaps the outcome would have been different. Or at least if the photographs that were taken had been shared with a physician qualified to examine child abuse investigations, or if those photos had been shared with the rest of the county's multidisciplinary team, that perhaps then this child's life might have been saved. House Bill 3328 starts to put those types of protocols into statute so that we can have consistent child abuse investigation procedures across the state of Oregon. Carly's Law asks that each county multidisciplinary team reaches out to the medical providers in its community, whether that's physicians, pediatricians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and finds out which of you are willing and which of you are able to assess a child as part of a child abuse investigation when they have suspicious injuries. Who of you are willing to be resources to the child abuse investigation team? The bill then says that during the course of a child abuse investigation, when the investigator goes out, and remember, only about 40% of allegations are followed up upon with an actual investigation where someone goes out. If that investigator goes out, it might be a law enforcement officer, it might be a DHS worker, and they find that the child has a suspicious physical injury, and we've defined these. These are things like burns or scalds, extensive bruisings or abrasions on any part of the body, or bruising, swelling, and abrasions on the head, neck, or face. Fractures of the bone in infants and toddlers, multiple fractures or dislocations, severe cuts, the loss of ability to walk. If the investigator finds that, we're going to change the way we do things in Oregon, and we're going to make sure that kid gets to a doctor within 48 hours. And we're going to try to get that child to a doctor that has experience in assessing child abuse. That's what this part of the bill says. It has sideboards so that if that designated medical professional is not available, the child can still go see another available physician. However, that physician will then consult with the professional that has that understanding of child abuse investigations and child abuse assessments. The bill also says that when that investigator goes out and encounters this child in the course of a child abuse investigation, when they have these injuries, they're going to photograph those injuries when they first encounter that child. This is very important, first of all, because many of the injuries inflicted upon a child as a result of child abuse can't be seen. Those that are often heal very quickly. So even if a child is getting to a doctor within about 48 hours, the bruising, the swelling, all of those things can look different. So it's very important that these photographs are taken and that they are made available to the physician that is assessing this child and providing medical care to this child. The bill also talks about the importance of retaining these photographs and making sure that all who are party to this investigation have access to these photos, whether it's the medical part of the team, law enforcement, child welfare, or other members of the child multidisciplinary team that might be staffing that case. If House Bill 3328, Carly's Law, had been law in the fall of 2004, Carly Sheehan would probably today be a laughing, dancing, 5-year-old child. We can't fix that. We can't go back in time and bring Carly back. But we can learn from this tragedy and reach out to help those other children, hopefully preventing not just further child deaths, but helping those children who continue to suffer the effects of physical abuse. We know that a child who is physically abused has a 50% chance or greater of being re-abused. We need to offer protection and help to these children. There are a couple of other important provisions to House Bill 3328. The first is that about 2 years ago, the governor instituted a new program that was called the Critical Incident Response Team. When there was a high-profile tragedy in the child welfare system, this multidisciplinary team would look, do an external review, and look for any systemic improvements that might need to be made for the system. This did not happen in Carly's case. This bill says that any time there's a child fatality involving a child who has previously been known to the agency, who's been the subject of a child abuse investigation, that this external review will happen. It also allows the district attorney who's prosecuting the homicide to be able to issue a letter to the governor and the director of the Department of Human Services outlining any improvements to the system that she or he found while doing that investigation. Colleagues, this is a complicated bill. It's also a simple bill. This is about getting kids medical attention when they need it. It's about helping those who are most vulnerable. I look forward to answering your questions, but I look more forward to seeing the I votes tallied up on this board and again in the Senate so that we can provide the necessary protection and response to these extremely vulnerable children. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I hope that you've had a few minutes to look over the bill that's before us today, and I rise in support of House Bill 3328, also known as Carley's Law. And no child in any of our districts should fall through the cracks. Unfortunately, child abuse and neglect is a very common reality for many children in the state. And we often don't get the chance to correct or try to improve the system when a tragedy takes place in our local community. With this bill, we have an opportunity to strengthen our systems so that no other child, hopefully, will fall through the cracks and be lost. I just want to say two final things. I want to thank the family of Carly Sheehan for coming before the Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee. It's always difficult to relive a tragedy, but to come and testify so that your child's death is not in vain, to improve the system so no other child is hurt, is incredibly important. And I know that I can perhaps speak for the other committee members. It was a very solemn hearing and a very silent committee hearing as we listened to what had happened to Carly. The other person I would like to thank, in addition to the family, is the good representative from Corvallis and Philomath, who has worked diligently to try to make a very complex issue simple and work with a variety of stakeholders to create a better safeguards in our system. And I hope you will support her and her efforts, support this bill, and for the children of Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The carrier said she was looking forward to questions, so I wonder if she would yield to a softball question.
Does carrier yield to a question?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. Under this bill, could DHS take a child, put them in protective custody based on someone's analysis of a photograph, or would they only be able to do that based on examination in person by the trained professional physician?
I had a difficult time hearing the second half of the question. Could you say it a little bit louder, please?
I'll speak more into the mic. How's that?
Yes, I will. The second part of the question was, would they be doing this based on someone's analysis of a photograph, or would DHS only be able to take the child into protective custody based on an examination by a physician?
Thank you very much, Representative, for that question. It raises a couple of important issues. The first is that this bill does nothing to change the procedures by which a child might be taken into protective custody. This bill only impacts the child abuse investigation. You talked about someone's assessment of a photograph. What this does, essentially, is put medical decisions, medical diagnosis, back in the hands of medical professionals. Right now, we are forcing law enforcement officers and child welfare workers to make diagnoses about whether or not an injury was inflicted as a result of abuse or neglect. The important part of getting these children to physicians that are able to recognize inflicted injury is that it protects both children who are victims of abuse, and in those rare, very, very rare cases where someone is inappropriately accused of abuse and the child is removed, it protects that parent as well because that assessment is being made by a trained medical professional. But this does not change the child protective custody process at all.
Further question, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question of the carrier. Do you yield?
Yes,
does.
Thank you. So what I'm understanding you saying is that the is that there has to be an evaluation by a trained medical physician or professional, not just based on a photograph, but rather that the while the photograph may be evidence, the there has to be a physician actually examine the injury, and the physician that's examining it is trained in child abuse cases, correct?
Thank you. What the bill doesn't say that any child is going to be removed as part of a photograph. What will happen is an allegation of abuse is made. The investigator, that might be a child welfare worker, it might be a law enforcement officer, they go out to investigate. They encounter the child, and the child has what's defined in the bill as a suspicious physical injury. We were very careful in defining these injuries not to pick up that any kid that had fallen off of a bicycle or slid into third base and had some of these typical childhood injuries would then be going through this process. We defined these as including but not limited to burns or scalds, extensive bruising or abrasions on any part of the body, bruising, swelling, or abrasions about the head, neck, or face, fractures of any bone in a child under the age of 3, multiple fractures in a child of any age, dislocations, soft tissue swelling, or moderate to severe cuts, the loss of the ability to walk or move, unconsciousness or difficulty maintaining consciousness, serious or protracted disfigurement, or loss of impairment of the function of any bodily organ. Now, if the investigator goes out there and they find a child that is in this condition, that is what triggers the components of this bill. And two things then have to happen. Those injuries, those visible injuries, must be photographed. Those photographs are going to be provided to the physician, and the child who's demonstrating these injuries must have a medical assessment within 48 hours. The bill puts in a lot of protections to get that to a trained medical provider that has expertise in doing child abuse assessments, but it also provides provisions that if the child is in need of emergency care, we're going to get that kid to the emergency room or where it is that they need to be, or if someone's not available, we're going to get them in for the examination and make it possible for that examining physician to consult with one of these specially trained individuals.
Follow-up question, Mr. Speaker?
Additional question to the carrier. Do you yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. Your answers are actually spawning more questions, so I appreciate the yield. Before Child Protective Services would be able to come in and remove a child from the home, the child is going to be evaluated by a trained medical professional. Is that correct?
Representative, if the child is subject to the provisions of this bill, and during the course of a child abuse investigation, they go out and they find this child who has these obvious physical injuries, then as part of the course of that child abuse investigation, that child is going to a physician. Now, there might be other cases that are not subject to this bill, where perhaps it's an investigation of neglect. This bill does not speak to the process for removing a child from a home. It simply speaks to the process of determining whether or not an injury is inflicted as the result of abuse or not. Even in the cases in Oregon where an injury might be inflicted as a result of abuse and that part is founded, the department may find that there's someone in the home or some other alternative way to keep the child safe, and even that might not lead to the removal of the child from the home.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, shortly before Carly was killed, there was a family in my district that was literally ripped apart by the state of Oregon. And it's one of those cases that you say, you know, if we're trying to keep families together and trying to help them thrive, we have a really funny way of showing it. Based on a photograph that was sent to CARES Northwest, DHS went in, picked up the child, and a 9-month-old girl, by the way, and a 2-year-old brother, and left, and took them out of the home. Then, after 10 months of wrangling with the state, hiring attorneys, and going broke, the family then got another surprise from the state of Oregon, and that was to be charged for child support after they were found of absolutely no wrongdoing. That'll come to you in a later bill. But what's interesting is that after, when the child had been taken to the doctor, the evaluation by the doctors were the child had a problem like impetigo, a little bit of an infection, was given antibiotics, and was sent home. Pictures were taken of that, because in childhood type of diseases and illnesses like this, you want to take pictures because you want to make sure that that it's documented, but you also want to make sure that you're following the injury so you can see what, or not the injury, but the skin rash, so you can make sure that it's not spreading and it isn't something else that might have been missed. Very common in medical practice. It's a good way to go. But the family unit was completely torn apart. This bill, I think, is going to prevent future cases like what I saw in my district or had in my district, because it's giving a level of protection to the families so that an overzealous caseworker, and colleagues, our caseworkers really do have unbridled power that we need to start reining in. And this is one way that we can do that, because this is setting up a process so that if there's a belief that a child is injured, that they should be removed from the home for their own safety, that a medical professional has to look at and evaluate the injuries or the illness or the rash or the problem to make sure that it really is what's being asserted by the state of Oregon. And I think that is a very good thing. In the case of in my district, the child was swooped out of the home. Based on a photograph, Carers Northwest decided that it was a burn based on the photograph. And all of a sudden, the family is in a defensive mode and having to defend themselves. I view this as being a good bill. I'm glad that the representative from Corvallis has brought it to us, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Boquist.
Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does Carrie yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representatives, we discussed on the staff measure summary, and you articulated earlier quite well, that 15% to 20% of the reported suspected child abuse is actually child abuse, and that, in fact, up to 80% is not child abuse, and there's innocent parents or others involved in this. And the medical assessment is designed to protect the child first and protect the parents second. In the staff measure summary, it outlines that if a trained provider is not available, that the family physician, in consultation in the future with a trained medical provider, can be involved within the first 48 hours. Under what circumstances and how would that develop?
Thank you for the question, Representative. That line in the staff measure summary actually reflects an amendment that was made. And one of the many amendments to this bill, we'd had a line that said if that designated medical professional is not available within 48 hours, the child will see another physician, and to the extent possible, that should not be the child's own pediatrician or family physician. The thinking originally behind putting that in the bill is that a family physician, a pediatrician, are building a very close relationship with a family, and that it's very difficult for them to make an assessment of child abuse situation. However, upon consultation with the medical professionals that work in this field, particularly in our rural areas, the designated provider might be the child's family physician or pediatrician. That family physician or pediatrician might be the only person in that county that's available to do the examination. And so that reflects that while the bill doesn't specifically speak to that family physician, that is available as a resource. I also wanted to clarify in the statistics that you mentioned, when I rattled off those that were founded as abuse and those that were unfounded, it is important to remember that Carly, for whom this bill is named, is one of those children for whom an allegation of abuse was unfounded. She was most certainly a victim of chronic, ongoing torture and abuse. We have insufficient tools to do these investigations. We have too few reports of child abuse going on already, and we do too little to protect these children. So I'm concerned that actually far more of those children in the unsubstantiated allegation category are victims of abuse, and they are at risk for all sorts of social ills as they grow older, in addition to their physical injuries.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, colleagues. I think the important point here that the dialogue between the good carrier and myself is that this bill protects both sides. This bill helps identify child abuse. It helps document it with an independent professional. And then it helps the parents that are innocent also. So this is a good bill on two counts. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciated the questions from my colleagues earlier on this bill, and I think the point that this protects parents and children both is a very valid one. In fact, when crafting the bill, I thought about the family that the representative from Wilsonville indicated. That family testified to an interim committee that I was part of, and at that time it had occurred to me if that child had had the opportunity to be evaluated by a physician at the time of that injury, the outcome for that family might have been very different. But who this bill is going to help are those significant numbers of other children who we currently are unable to provide services or assistance to because their cases are unfounded for abuse. Most victims of physical abuse are children under the age of 5. Children under the age of 5 frequently don't have the developmental ability to talk about their abuse, to talk about their injuries, and to describe where they came from. However, in the presence of an appropriate medical provider, that child's injuries and physical condition can speak volumes about the risks that that child is facing. It is important that we have adequate child abuse investigation tools, not only to prevent childhood deaths, but also to provide protection to those children who are chronic victims of abuse and neglect. This bill addresses only physical abuse, and we know that for children who are physically abused, when there is not an intervention, they have a greater than 50% chance of being re-abused. Even if a child does not die or have ongoing permanent physical disfigurement or injury as a result of that abuse, childhood physical abuse impacts that child forever. 80% of young adults who had been abused met the diagnostic criteria for at least one psychiatric disorder by the age of 21. Children who experience child abuse are 59% more likely to be arrested as a juvenile, 28% more likely to be arrested as an adult, and 30% more likely to commit a violent crime. And nearly two-thirds of the people in treatment for drug abuse reported being physically abused as children. It's important to remember that the rate of child abuse is estimated to be 3 times greater than what is reported. And we also have to remember that 79% of the children who are killed as a result of abuse are children under the age of 4. Colleagues, this bill makes sense. This bill is important to protect these children. They do not have the ability to lift up their voices and ask for help. And unfortunately, because of the circumstance, if they are able to ask for help, those that they trust and ask to help them often can't, either because they are the abusers or because their other caregivers are victims themselves of domestic violence and domestic abuse that might be happening in the home. If we look at this child and look at all of the agencies that came forward to help her, it is an absolute tragedy that we were not able to save her. This bill would help in the future to save children like Carly, and it will help to improve the lives of thousands of other Oregon children in the coming years who need their injuries to tell the stories of their abuse so that we can get them to a place where they are safe. This bill is called Carly's Law. However, like any child who has been a victim. We have to remember that that victimization, and that for Carly, this bill or her death, those are not her legacy. Her legacy is the joy and the happiness that she brought to those who loved her. And what she did was raise to my community the question of how is it that we could allow this to happen on a busy street across from a school in the middle of the day. Colleagues, we can't continue to allow that to happen to children in Oregon. This bill will help us provide that necessary protection to these children. Please join me in voting in favor of Carly's Law, House Bill 3328. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 3328A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. First reading of House Bills.
House Bill 3552 relating to abandoned property. House Bill 3553 relating to crime. House Bill 3554 relating to illegal presence and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 5028 relating to financial mystery of the Wearing Health License Agency and declaring emergency. House Bill 5030 relating to financial mystery of the State Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology and declaring emergency. House Bill 2273 relating to signs and declaring emergency. House Bill 2583 relating to indemnity. House Bill 2950 relating to post-port commissioner training. House Bill 3445 relating to service districts and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the bill remaining on today's consent calendar be carried over to its proper place on Tuesday, May 1st, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Third reading of House Bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, the bills remaining on today's third reading of House Bills be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 1st, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining, the memorials and resolutions remaining on today's final reading, memorials and resolutions be carried over their proper place on Tuesday, May 1st, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 492 relating to athletic activities regulated by the Superintendent of State Police and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 688 relating to subject workers for purposes of workers' compensation statutes. Senate Bill 694 relating to confinement of animals. Senate Bill 875 relating to wave energy facilities and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 989 relating to public body exempt from insurance code. Senate Bill 1022 relating to tolls. Senate Bill 1040 relating to students with chronic illnesses declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5511 relating to financial administration of the Employment Relations Board, appropriate money, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5512 relating to financial administration of the State Department of Energy, appropriate money, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5527 relating to financial administration of the Board of Medical Examiners and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5534 relating to financial administration of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, appropriate money, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5541 relating to financial administration of the Department of Veterans Affairs, appropriate money, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5545 relating to State Financial Administration, appropriate money, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 432 relating to ship breaking and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended. The bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 1st, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans will caucus. When we're finished, please get your lunch and hustle to the caucus room. Thank you.
I got Brian. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under remonstrances.
You need to come back in under remonstrances and we're under announcements. Representative Hunt.
House Democrats will also caucus immediately upon adjournment. Please grab your lunch.
Further announcements? Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Did I say announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, for the first time in 7 years, I walked out of a committee meeting today. House Bill 2909 was heard last Friday, and during that particular meeting, committee meeting, the chair refused after the motion was made and dropped the gavel and never addressed the motion to move the Dash 2 amendments, and we allowed that to take place and didn't really object at the time. On that bill today, we had Dash 2s, I believe 5s, 7s, 8s, 9, and 10. Only ones that weren't tried to be moved today were the Dash 2s. During that time, the chair on two occasions tried to amend the motion. Other people on the committee tried to amend the bill, the actual amendment, in other words, an amendment to an amendment to replace it. I was offended by what had taken place in that committee, and I think that was an affront to D's and R's as trying to manipulate the process in a committee. At no time since I've been here did I see Representative Max Williams. No time did I ever see Representative Ackerman, Representative Barker, or myself try to manipulate a bill to this degree and send it down to rules. It wasn't necessary, and I was greatly offended. Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Lim be allowed the opportunity to address the House as part of remonstrances for 6 minutes.
I ask for unanimous consent to allow Representative Lim, that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Lim to address the House under remonstrances for up to 6 minutes. Is there an objection? Hearing none, that is accepted. Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members allowing me to speak more than 3 minutes, which is a special privilege, which I do appreciate very much. Last Thursday, we were discussing the landmark legislation concerning the health kit issue and also the tobacco tax increase. I thought that this bill is very important. And I believe everyone who wants to speak should be allowed to speak instead of cut short, moving the previous questions. So two members was going to speak more, and I was not punched the button yet. I was not going to speak, but during the debate, it triggered me. I need to speak on this issue, even though I didn't punch the button to speak. I just want to clarify for that point at this time. We have more than 600 people in our state smoking. Children are continue to growing smoking and more and more. And also we need to cover at the same time the children and that the underinsured or no insurance, they need really help covered by this bill. I don't think it's right to cut short of the debate of this important issue. We have already 117,000 children not covered and a lot of smokers. I think this bill is important enough. We need to discuss fully instead of not giving any opportunity to speak on this issue. But I respect the institution deeply and I care. And I also understand that I need to play by the rules we set up here. Many people came to me, John, you are the man of principle. I respect you. Several people also mentioned, John, I respect you, but I don't agree with you. This is the institution. We can agree, we don't agree. when many of the members, if not all, said, I'm the man of principle, not necessarily so. We do all have each principle of our own. In this Constitution, we need to compromise over our principle. Without it, we cannot get out here forever. I'm speaking the faith I have, what I believe in. It is not necessarily principle. I believe it is the things I believe in that I should have the opportunity to speak, which I lost. And also, I stayed overnight here on the night of last Thursday. But let me tell you, this is not the best place to stay overnight. And then one of our members brought me two pillows and blankets, and others brought a lot of waters. So I have 1 month of supply of waters. And so I do appreciate the care and the love concerns you have shown. And I don't have any personal grudge with anyone else in our body. Only I'm talking about the institution we have. By staying overnight, I'm not, you may say, oh, John is protesting. But it is not. I just want to send my statement, what I believe in. That's all it's about. I never been protested in the street in my life. I believe in more information, education, and if I have to anything protest, then I need to study, and I do in a different way. This is one way. At least I have shown my faith, making my statement, staying here overnight. And also, let me tell you, this is a good sign that I practice also. It's coming pretty soon. We debated about the hour and 5 minutes. And the previous days, we debated about 4 hours. What's the difference? I believe health care issue is more important than anything else. And we were caught short. To me, right to speak is the constitutional given right. No one can take that away. Even though rules is important, I thought constitutional right to speak is more important. We should have the same right, every citizen of our state, of our country, especially to the elected representative like we are here. Sometimes I struggle when I vote whether I should go this way or this way. Sometimes it's not daylight clear, black and white. I struggle hard. Sometimes I change my mind as I listen debate. So that's an important opportunity for each member of you to listen the debate was going on, because more than a few times I was able to change my vote because of the debate. I need to bring back the civility to our institution again. Hopefully when we use the previous question, I hope we can use with the civility, with due respectfully, and with the right way. And I do appreciate that the speaker and the members are giving me this double opportunity to speak on this matter. And I have no personal issue at all. I respect the speaker, and the courageous all have shown. Only I deeply sorry someone who was going to fly out for the weddings and others, they were not able to get in time. But I deeply sorry for that, and may God bless each one of you of this institution and of our country. Thank you very much.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I consider it a great honor to serve in this body. It's a humbling experience. Poor guy from textile mills in North Carolina to be able to stand here and talk to you and serve the people of Oregon and try to do the right thing. We all have issues that come before us, that there's a lot of pressure from all sides on how to vote. And we try to do what's best. And I believe everyone in this chamber, I always say that the only person I know in this chamber that's running for governor is in the other body, he's my senator. I think we're here to do the right thing. But I was disappointed, as my friend from Southwest Oregon stated, in how our committee was administered today and chaired today. I don't think it was done professionally and properly, and I have to make that statement, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 1st, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 1st, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 1st, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.